on August 23rd. Here is one question asked to Democrats Jamie Chaney and Josh Riley.
So we're going to move on to some national issues now. The first one is reproductive rights. So you both state that you support a woman's right to choose and codification. Even if we can pass reproductive rights legislation in Congress, how would you address the possibility of of Republicans overturning legislation or the Supreme Court overruling legislation? Please detail the steps you'll take to ensure reproductive rights if you are elected. And please be specific. I'm going to hand this one off to Josh first.
Thank you. So the work on this issue can't wait. So every Democrat who's running for any office across the country should promise you in no uncertain terms that they will support codification of Roe. If they're not making that promise to you, they're not worth your time or your vote. I support unequivocally codification of Roe, and I'll do it on day one. There are so many other things we need to do, though, creatively with the legislative and congressional oversight process to overturn the Dobbs decision. One of the things I've already been working on so that we can hit the ground running on day one in Congress is having the Justice Department enforce women's right to FDA-approved abortion medications. Those are authorized right now for up to 10 weeks, and they account for about half of abortions in the country right now. I sent a letter to the Justice Department. I've been in contact with some of their senior leadership, asking the Justice Department, regardless of what's going on with Roe, to sue states that are trying to restrict access to those medications, because state laws restricting access to federally approved medications are clearly unconstitutional. That's the type of creative legal thinking and thinking outside the box we need to engage in, because this is a huge, huge challenge if we're just relying on the legislative process. Let me give you just one other really quick example. After Roe v. Wade was decided in the 70s, a bunch of anti-choice lawmakers passed what was called the Hyde Amendment. It was a provision in our appropriations bills, basically our budget, that said funding, federal funding, can't be used to pay for reproductive health care in the Medicaid system. And that's been on the books for a long, long time. Right now, we need to turn the tables on the anti-choice lawmakers, and we need to put amendments in the budget that says federal money's not going to states that are restricting women's access to health care services. If it was good enough for them to do it and hurt reproductive rights, then it's good enough for us to do it in this moment to be on the right side of that issue.
Jamie?
I'm going to go ahead and turn my video off again.
Okay.
This issue is personal to me. I'm very open about the fact that I am alive today because of abortion. There's health care. For those of you who haven't seen our TV ad we released last week, I made a decision to share that story because we need to make it clear that these are not things that are happening on the fringes. Abortion very much is healthcare, and we need to make sure that every woman has the right to the very decision that I made that saved my life and my family. In terms of legislative work, we need to pass the Women's Health Protection Act. We need to overturn the Hyde Amendment. We need to protect access to medication abortion. We also need to pass the Equal Rights Amendment. I have spent my professional career, though, unpacking issues for working women and working families. And sometimes they're not only the issues that are on the surface. And I believe that this is an element of what's happening with Roe. There's a legislative work that needs to be done, and then there is simply the underinvestment in women's healthcare that we have made across the board. 90% of the 19th district is in OBGYN desert. That means that someone needs to drive over an hour for OBGYN healthcare. What does that mean for the 15-year-old girl who's seeking out contraception? What does that mean if she suspects she's pregnant and she's trying to get information to make a decision by a certain point in her pregnancy where she might be comfortable with the decision, or God forbid, state law prevents her from making a decision that might be right for her? I think we need to look at the whole picture. This is where someone who can speak to this from lived experience can say, this is about a law and it's about so much more. It's about underinvestment and undersupport of women's health care in this country.
Thank you, Jamie.
Ocho, seis, uno,
tune in the Radio Art Hour, Saturdays at 3 p.m. on WGXE, a show where art is not just on the radio, but is the radio.
Oh, radio, radio. Uh-huh. Radio.
The Radio Art Hour draws from the Wavefarm Broadcast Radio Art Archive, an online resource that aims to identify, coalesce, and celebrate historical and contemporary international radio artworks made by artists around the world. Tune in the Radio Art Hour, Saturdays at 3 p.m. on WGXE 90.7 FM.
This is Otis M. Carson. I'm from NYC, and you're listening to WGXC Acra Hudson Catskill.
The sun is a mass of incandescent gas, a gigantic nuclear furnace, where hydrogen is built into helium at a temperature of millions of degrees.
Oh, Helios. Oh, yellow star, oh, glowing sphere, gleaming beacon, brilliant flaming orb, giver of light, warmth, and radio. Yes, it's true. WGXC's brand new solar panels are installed and ready for deployment, where they'll be calling on the free and plentiful rays of the sun to bring our station close to full sustainability.
To make WGXC a solar-powered radio station.
We are going solar. WGXC will be a solar-powered community radio station, getting our power from the sun rather than foreign despots.
WGXC loves the sun, and we're going to love it even more now that WGXC is going solar.
Thank you. Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson. Listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Georgia. I'm 11, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Fahia, and I'm 8 years old, and I'm also from Hudson.
And I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm also from Hudson.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate.
And bookish things. And that's what we'll do today, because that's what we do every week on Bound by Books.
What if we had one week where we just talked about anything but a book?
No books allowed.
That would be a nightmare.
Terrifying.
We'd have nothing to do.
I'd have to listen to the radio with my hands over my face. Doesn't make any sense. There's no real, I guess, fingers in my ears, but then it's, I don't know. It's not quite the same equivalent to like peeking through your fingers when you're watching something scary for listening. Mm-hmm. Who wants to get us started today? How about Fatia?
Well, I have this I wrote this whole thing. It's called Mermaid Tales, A Tale of Two Sisters. And it's by, I think it's by Debit Daddy. And the characters' names are, like, Eco, Shelly, Crystal, Miss and Mr. V, Kaiki, Pearl, and Mare Ridge. And their, goal is to get the treasure. It's, a trip, but they didn't know it was, a treasure of a human, from a human. And the problem was that Eco, helped her sister, Crystal, but she couldn't, go to parent night, and Eco could not go to tail flippers practice. And the happy ending was their mama was happy and proud of Crystal and Eco, and Eco's coach gave her one more chance, so they lived happily ever after. The end. I wrote part of it, and yeah, I wrote parts of it.
So that was something, was that a book report, or was that something, a story that you wrote?
It's a book report, it's a small book report.
Okay, that's what I thought. I just wanted to make sure I was understanding.
I never made a book report before.
Were you doing it as an assignment or just for fun?
It's my own assignment.
Oh, okay. That's cool. Yeah, I wonder what grade you learn how to write a book report in. Do you remember, Georgia, when you first learned to write a book report?
I don't know if I've actually written a book report before.
Oh.
Wait, I think I have, but in a different form than normal. I guess it's just been something where, write a poem or, a comic strip or something, and then write about the book itself. But I guess I haven't really done, one of the classic book reports before. Mm-hmm. But I've done, a much more fun form of it, I guess I'd say. But I know how to write one. I think they taught me, I don't know, I think maybe fourth grade, fifth grade. I don't know. Maybe around there.
I forget. So, what grade are you going into, Fatia?
Going into fourth grade.
Okay.
That makes
maybe
sense.
You'll learn this year.
You'll probably learn this year or next year.
Cool. Well, thanks for sharing your debut book report. Although you give us sort of radio book reports frequently on the show, so that's cool. So Georgia, what did you have to talk about today?
So I'm talking about the sequel to a book that I read, a book that I shared a week or two ago called The Witches of Brooklyn, and this sequel is called What the Hex, and it's really good. It's a very good sequel. It's not one of those where it's the first one's great and the second one's trash. It's a really, really good sequel, so I definitely recommend this, but definitely you should read the first one before you read this one, because I hope that this turns into a series. It might. I don't know. Okay, I'm going to read the description. Could there be even more witches in Brooklyn? Effie is excited to meet so many witches, but what's going on with her friends? Do they like the new kid more than her? On top of that, learning magic is hard work. Effie just wants to have fun being a witch, but life in Brooklyn is about to get weirder.
That's a very quick description. I like the title, What the Hex? Mm-hmm. Clever.
I think that's the only description. Yeah, it's a really good book. Definitely would recommend it. Definitely would also recommend reading the first one before reading this one, because nothing will make sense at all.
Good to know. That's a big question of mine whenever there's a series that, because sometimes there are series where you can just jump in the middle and it's fine. You don't have to read them in order, but some you really miss out or like are totally lost if you haven't read them all, mm-hmm. or at least all the earlier ones.
Like The Diary of a Wimpy Kid, you can literally read them in any order, mm-hmm. but this, nothing will make sense if you don't read it in order.
So what was the first one again? Witches of Brooklyn?
Witches of Brooklyn.
Or that's the series.
And okay. The second one is What the Hex.
Great. So people can check those out.
And
in order.
Yeah. And The New Girl, I had suspected from the beginning what was up with her, and I was right. So I won't tell what.
That's always fun when your predictions, like, you finally figure out that you're right.
It is.
Well, thanks for sharing that. I have a book that I just read, which I mentioned on the radio show when it was coming out last month, I think, as a book that sounded good. And I read it, and it turns out I was right. It was good. So it's called Smaller Sister. It's by Maggie Edkins Willis. And it's a middle grade graphic novel. It is fiction, although it's inspired by the author's childhood and relationship with her sister, but it's very fictionalized. So it's not an autobiography, but it is inspired by her childhood. But it's fictionalized in many ways, including in this story, there's two sisters, and in her real life, there were three. But the story is told from the perspective of Luce, or Lucy, she goes by Luce, who is the younger of two sisters, but they're very close in age. They're just about a year apart. And her older sister, Olivia, who goes by Livy, at a young age, develops an eating disorder, anorexia, where she is very controlling of what food she puts in her body and exercises to an extreme where she's not healthy and loses a lot of weight and strength. And so it starts off before she gets sick and shows their relationship and then how their relationship changes when she becomes sick. And then sort of as that goes along, her getting better, but also looks into Luce's own day-to-day life. So it's not just about their relationship as sisters or the struggles of her sister, but also about Luce's time making friends in school and about her own body image and trying to figure out her place in school and like what's her talent and, you know, who is she and what does she like to wear? And so it's a very good book, and it follows them through many different changes. They move. They change schools at one point, and then they move and have to go to another school at another point. And those changes can be really tough for anybody, but especially for her sister, whose sickness has some to do with control and what you can control in life. And so having changes can be a little unsettling. And then there's also a little bit that happens at camp one summer that's fun. So I thought it was a very nice story. I liked both the relationship between the sisters, both good and bad, I think is very relatable, even if it's not exactly relatable, if that makes sense. Like, it's not like my sister and my relationship is exactly like these two sisters, but there were things that like I could connect to. And the same with her like school life and figuring out who her friends are and kind of some of the meanness of girls of a certain age and boys too. But she has some not so nice friends at certain points, and you know, some of the struggles of aging where at some point, you know, especially if you have a younger or an older friend or sibling where you might have fun doing something and then at some point they hit an age where they think it's babyish, but you're like, but I still want to play that game. It's so fun. I don't know. Thought it was highly relatable, even though there was very little that actually was something that I've like experienced in life. But I thought that was pretty cool about it. And this is her debut graphic novel. And I thought she did a really good job of both storytelling and character development. And her artwork is nice. So we'll have to keep an eye out for more books by Maggie Edkins Willis. So that's Smaller Sister.
Sounds like an amazing book. I'd love to check that out. It's a bummer that I can't get on Libby.
Oh, it's not available on there yet.
Maybe someday.
Yeah, I can check out if it's available to purchase or not. Not sure. Sometimes they aren't for whatever reason. Or sometimes they're like a bajillion dollars, which we don't have.
I don't think anyone has a bajillion dollars.
Be pretty cool if they did. Well, if they did and wanted to buy ebooks for the library, that is.
Yeah.
So recently, the Eisner Awards were nominated, which are graphic novel industry awards that they give out every year during Comic-Con in California. And since we read a lot of comics on the show, I thought I would note the ones that are for young readers. So for the early readers, which is up to age 8, the winner was Chibi Usagi, Attack of the Hebe Chibis by Julie and Stan Sakai, which I have checked out right now, but I haven't read it yet. So maybe I'll read it and report back next week. The only one on the nominees that I have read there was Arlo and Pips, number 2, Join the Crow Crowd by Elise Gravel, which is really cute, fun series. The characters are all crows.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. And then Best Publication for Kids, ages 9 to 12, which is like, those are the books we really love on this show. We talk about them all the time. And the winner for that, I'm going to check out right after the radio show. And so I'll be able to report back on that next week. But the winner was Salt Magic by Hope Larson and Rebecca Mock, which sounds really good. I could read the description for that one.
I've read a book by Hope Larson, a really good one.
Yeah. It was about a band, right? Or
mm-hmm.
Okay, so here's the description for Salt Magic. 12-year-old Von Sale cannot wait for her older brother, Elbert, to come home to the family farm in Oklahoma after serving on the front lines of World War I. But the young man who greets her at the train station is serious and responsible, not the fun-loving brother she remembers. And he doesn't have time for her anymore, especially not after he marries his plain, boring childhood sweetheart. Soon after the wedding, glamorous, mysterious Greta arrives at the farm. She's followed Elbert all the way back from Paris. And when she learns he's married another woman, she's furious, revealing herself as a powerful salt witch. She dooms the farm by turning its only source of water, a spring, to crop-destroying salt water. Elbert falls ill from the shock, so Von Sale strikes out on her own to confront Greta and lift the curse. In this utterly unique graphic novel fairy tale, Von Sale travels through deserts, ghost towns, and her own family's past in her quest to set things right. The journey will change her in ways that can't be undone and teach her powerful lessons about sacrifice, love, and the importance of family.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, I'm very excited to read that. So I'll report back next week. And then the other books that were nominated in that category, I also wasn't very familiar with, except I think you read one of them. Did you read Allergic?
Yes. So good.
So that was nominated in that category. That's by Megan Wagner Lloyd and Michelle Mainutter.
What are the other books?
There was Four-Fisted Tales, Animals in Combat by Ben Towle, Rainbow Bridge by Steve Orlando, Steve Fox, and Valentina Brincati, Saving Soria, Chang and the Sun Bear by Trang Nguyen and Jeet Zdung, and The Science of Surfing, A Surfside Girl's Guide to the Ocean by Kim Dwinell. So I'll have to see if I can get those brought in to read. So they're probably pretty good, but I hadn't heard of them. The best publication for teens ages 13 to 17 went to The Legend of Auntie Poe by Xing Yin Kor. And there's lots of other awards for, this one I guess could be youth friendly. There's a best graphic memoir was for Run Book One by John Lewis, Andrew Aiden, L. Fury, and Nate Powell, which is, there was a series of books called March, which were by John Lewis, the former senator who passed away a few years back. And those talked about his earlier years in politics, although sort of flashed forward to current day or more present day. And so Run is looking at his Senate run. And I haven't read that one yet. I've read all of the March books. But yeah, there was also, I know she's not on today, but our friend Amelia, who's on the radio show sometimes, we know loves Junji Ito. And a book called Love Sickness, Junji Ito Story Collection, won Best U.S. Edition of International Material Asia.
Oh, yeah. Amelia's going to be happy.
Yeah, you can, if you do a search online, you can find all of the various winners of, you know, so they have like best cover artist, best letterer, best writer, best adaptation, so many different awards. So you can check those out if you're a big graphic novel fan like us. Well, before we go for today, does anyone have anything they're excited about or looking forward to that they wanted to share?
Oh, well, my school starts August 29th.
So just and 1 month to go.
This weekend, my old teacher, who's now our babysitter, she's coming to babysit us overnight because my parents are going to a nice hotel for one night to celebrate my dad's birthday. And then next week, I'm also getting babysat because my parents are going to a concert with my grandparents by one of my camp counselors, actually, which is super exciting because this one, she's one of my favorites. So, yeah.
That's cool. Get some fun time with some nice adults in your life.
Yes.
What do you like to do when you have a babysitter over?
Usually I talk to them because I tend to have really good babysitters. And at least my normal babysitter, the one that used to be my teacher, I actually had her as a teacher for 5 years and we're really close. She's like my best friend.
Aww.
She's my best friend. So I mostly just talk to her, catch up with her. I mean, I treat her as if she's like my very best friend, which she is. She is my very best friend. Yeah. So that's why a babysitter comes, because she's usually that.
That sounds fun. So how about you, Fatia?
For me, like, it's for my brother's school, because my brother had an interview for school not too long ago, and I'm kind of excited because I think that we're going to go on the same bus together. Maybe we'll be in different buses. Maybe my brother will come to my bus. Maybe I'll come to his bus. I have no idea.
So you're looking forward to the potential of riding a bus together.
I'm also excited for, like, because my new backpack, because we already bought it, but I wasn't allowed to see it yet. I didn't see it. I don't know, like, what my backpack looks like. I'm pretty excited. My school starts at September something.
I love that it's not even August yet and you both are so excited for school. You're like, ready. Yay. It's nice that you like school so much.
Well, I'm going to public school for the first time. And I've never gone to a school with more than like 150 people, entire school. Like, never gone to a school with more than 200 people in the whole school. So I'm really excited to go public middle school first time. And I'm just so excited. And also it means a fresh start. And I don't know many people, which is exciting. Fresh start. That's why I'm so pumped. Usually I do not like school starting, but I'm so pumped.
Yeah. Get to meet some new people. That'll be fun.
New friends, new
always
people.
Always went to public school.
Hmm? New friends, new people. New art lessons and art teachers and art everything, which is exciting.
Maybe some new clubs. I know we were talking about clubs on a recent show.